Hello and welcome back to the Share Vancouver podcast. Today we are so grateful to invite on another beautiful, hopeful mother-daughter duo. Today we invite Sid Gill and Dee Gill on the podcast. Sid Gill works at Community, which is BC's largest queer, trans, and two-spirit resource center, as a fundraising coordinator, and she is also on the board for Vancouver Dyke March. And her mom, Dee Gill, is a clinical counselor with over 30 years of experience and an inspiring mom who advocates for her two trans daughters. For today's episode, we first welcome Sid.
Hello. Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here with you folks.
Welcome, welcome. We're super excited.
Yes. Your mom's here in the background cheering you on.
Yes, it's great inspiration and having the powerful mom behind y'all watching. Yeah,
Sid, we're so happy to have you on. We've been meaning to have someone in Community on the podcast mm-hmm. and share the great work y'all do, and also someone who, you know, can share their life journey as a trans woman, because I feel like with the elections coming up and all the anti-trans hate that's happening, I think we just need to bring forth more voices so that trans people, trans lives matter, and we can normalize them and integrate them more into society.
Yeah, definitely. We got to advocate, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's so much going on right now, and I feel like with the increased awareness and intention that is happening around trans politics and trans folks, it's time that we center trans voices to tell people what needs to be done and how to react in this moment, and I'm very grateful to have the space to do that today.
Yeah.
We know that you're both mixed Punjabi and white, mm-hmm. and we'd love to know how that was growing up and, you know, coming into the queer and trans scene, how that's been for yourself navigating that.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a very complex sort of set of identities to deal with and sort of understand my positionality. Growing up, and I think this has maybe changed, I hope so, but I got so much of the, from every random person in my life, like, what are you? Where are you from? Like, all these questions where people couldn't understand my identity being a mixed race person. There'd be moments where my mom would come and pick me up from things, and like, people would do a double take being like, that's your mom, or people think I'm adopted, which is like, whatever, didn't really get to me. I think the times that it felt the most challenging were in predominantly brown and Punjabi spaces, where I felt so a part of the culture, but there was a lot of this looking at me and like, who is this person? Why are they here? And the part of growing up for me that was really important was that Indo-Canadian side of my family. Like, we were very close and we spent a lot of time together. So it's always felt so ingrained into me. And the effect of that was I started to see myself. I was like, oh, I must be white. If the, all these people are othering me, I must be white. And then I went to university, and I grew up in a space and place where most folks were BIPOC, like in my school, everywhere in my life. Like, I was unused to being around white people, and so I didn't understand what it meant to be a white person in a space. And it wasn't until I went to university where I started encountering white people and my first group of queer people, predominantly white. And I thought, wow, I am not this. This feels really different than my experience. And as I was coming to reconcile with my own gender and sexuality, I started seeing only queer people as white people. And again, this thing happened where I meant, I feel like I'm this thing, but the only representation I'm seeing are often these like wealthy white people who come from these very like liberal families. And I didn't feel like that either. And I think, again, that was this like, well, where are my people? And I think especially with holding the intersections I do and sort of the way I move through the world, I don't see a lot of other people who have the same background as me, which is fine. I find connection with people in like a many different ways. There's not a shared experience that I can easily find people and be like, oh my God, I know exactly what it was like for you growing up. It's very specific. And that's the thing I'm coming to understand, but also really celebrate about my identity. It's really complex and nuanced and different than everyone, and I think that's like a really beautiful perspective to bring to spaces.
It's interesting that you say that, because you're saying like you were brought up in like this, you know, with brown families, everybody's super connected and everybody wants to be close. It's very, everybody's like family knit, super close. But then going out to the real world of like, not that's not a real world, that's like our world, but when you're going out to university and such, yes, I'd say a lot of queer spaces are very white dominated, right?
Yes.
So it is, I mean, Sharon, in university too, it's probably was very similar to that, having that experience. But it's so weird, and I'm hoping and that's all changing nowadays. Mm-hmm. And it has, like, organizations like Community, Share Vancouver.
Totally.
You know what I mean? That have, like, been able to change that aspect, which mm-hmm. has been nice. Being able to share and open up and be, because we were even so skeptical getting into Share Vancouver, right?
Yeah.
The
thing that I always think when it comes to specifically trans identity, I think we, so much as BIPOC people, think of that there's like a liberal whiteness and queerness where they know what acceptance is, they know what transness is. And I'm like, we come from a part of the world where third gender has been there for thousands of years. We've celebrated it. Mm-hmm. We are the founders of this. Like, this whole society needs to be learning from us how to celebrate and like put these voices up. And I think that's the sort of recontextualization I'm doing in my brain. Like, it's in my culture. It's in my blood. I don't need to learn from other communities on how to be trans or queer.
Totally.
Yeah. I think that's really big, because even with our guests, we've learned, like, you know, it's in, like, Hindu mythology, you know? It's in, like,
it dates back far.
It dates back in our culture. And, you know, touching on that, like, even joining Sharevan, we were very skeptical being brown, being like, oh, no, we don't want to be outed, or we don't want to be, like, in the brown space where someone might know us. But it's completely changed. I think, like, post-pandemic, it's very, like, connect to your roots, own your identity, own your culture. And I'm curious, like, is that sort of the space you're in now? Because we haven't seen you at Share events, and we would love to have you.
Yeah, so. I think there has been a big fear, and this is something I'm still working on, of post-coming out, of, like, how to engage in those spaces. And I think, regardless of the cultural components, when you're growing up and you're a trans individual, you're going to express your gender in ways that are very non-normative. And family spaces are those first times that people are like, boys, don't do that. Yeah. You can't wear that. You're such a girl. Like, you start getting all those negative gender policing, I want to say. And as I'm becoming more confident in myself, I'm able to let go of some of that pain and process it. But I think a lot of it for me has been connecting familial spaces to those, like, first experiences of that as a trans woman. I made a false connection with culture for a while, whereas, like, maybe this is a space that I can't continue to be in post coming out, and I have to be in my bubble. And the thing I'm realizing is I'm a strong girl. Like, I can go anywhere now. Like, I know who I am, and I know my worth. And it feels really important for me to be in those spaces, not just for myself and the value I get out of family and connection and culture, but for everyone else's around me too. So I'm trying to integrate that more and more into my life and detach away from this idea of white queerness being this, like, beacon of hope that I need to walk towards.
Yeah, that's very powerful.
And very relatable.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we've all had our journeys of, like, unlearning that, like, oh, it's not like a brown thing to be queer. It's like a white thing. So I think we're all learning that as well. And just joining, I think Sharevan has been very healing for us. Because, yeah, I think growing up, we knowing that, like, oh, we're very policing of each other. Like, oh, boys don't do this. Girls don't wear this. This is not how you act. But I think post-pandemic, people's mindsets have really changed. And conversations like these are happening. And we just love that.
Yeah.
There's more dialogue, which is great. I think just people are getting more educated on it as well, right? There's so much more folks coming out, speaking about it, opening up that dialogue, which is really helpful. And hence why we have folks like yourself on to build that community and openness to everybody's minds. So,
yeah, definitely. And it gives people an option, right? When they start seeing people and, like, spaces created like Sharevan, like, oh, I can go there and I can learn from these people. Because so much of being queer and trans, I think, is that, like, mentorship you get from elders within the community. And when those people look like you and they have your cultural experiences, those are the people you need in your lives. And those are the people that are going to, like, push you to be your authentic self.
Totally.
Yeah. That was Jag Negra for us.
Yeah.
Shout out to Jag.
We'll switch it up a little bit. We want to know a little bit more about the community's annual Taste of Pride event, where we actually had met you.
Yeah.
And your whole family.
Yes.
That was awesome. That was a great night. So, yeah, give us a bit more insight on that and what that event is about.
We're a nonprofit. We're a charity. We have free and accessible programs for queer, trans, and two-spirit folks. And the fun part about trying to create free programming is it requires lots of money to do it. So my job at Community is in fundraising. We do two fundraisers normally throughout the year. These are, like, our big in-person events where we invite folks in to donate, to also connect and network with each other. And historically, we had always done this event in the fall called Stack the Rack, and it was this wine tasting event, and it had been going on for like 10, 15 years. And I came into Q, and I'm very much an ideas person, and I feel very empowered at work to try new things. So I was like, let's redo this event. I have this really cool idea. I have this amazing trans chef, Billy Nguyen, who I wanted to work with, who created a tasting menu, donated their time. We had a wine partner, and we did like a tasting menu, and we weaved in stories of impact throughout the night. So it was like this big event that really was like one of the first things that was like solely mine. Like, this was my event that I really put together with my idea executed. And it was a really big moment for me in my professional career. Not only was it this big professional moment, but it became this very big personal moment, as you were mentioning. My mom was there, but also my uncle and my mussy were there too. And I think this night felt really important to me because it was sort of the first time folks from my extended family have been in my world. After coming out of the pandemic, my confidence levels were pretty low. And like I said, engaging with family and culture I felt really fearful of it. Mm-hmm. But I had been starting to try to repair these relationships. I'd sort of taken a break, but it was always going to the family event, kind of being in the corner. And it's like, no one was rude. We just didn't talk about it. It was like, Sid's here. Mm-hmm. Oh, good to see you.
Yeah.
You know, and that was it, which felt weird because there was a really big change. It's like very fair to say when someone transitions, there's a really big change. And I think the levels of which people are familiar with these topics of gender and sexuality are like pretty low, and people are uncomfortable, so they don't know what to say. But for my own family to come to this event that was very much about celebrating queer folks and trans folks felt like, to me, the like ultimate form of acceptance, because it wasn't that sort of tolerance like, you might be trans, but you're our family, so we're okay with it. It was, we're here to see you doing a really big career moment and celebrate you for that. And we see the communities you're advocating for, and we're standing behind you. Yeah, it felt really important to me. And I feel like that has given me more of the motivation to reconnect with family as well.
That's brilliant. Yeah. It was such a nice moment. I just remember, I was like, there's brown people. I was like, sure. Yeah. I'm like there's brown people here. Yeah. I'm like, we need to go say hi.
Yeah. I was so thrilled that y'all were there too. And it was so nice to see someone who has an outside perspective to understand how important that would be for me.
Yes.
The fact that I could see you look at what was happening, and that to me was so helpful for it to like really stick. I was like, oh, they see what's happening. Like, do you see what's happening? I was like, oh yeah, I see what's happening now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, Neri, is this family real?
I was like, there's an uncle, auntie. I'm like, hi. I was like, let's go say hello. Yeah.
That's literally how it went.
That's exactly what I said. I'm like, let's go.
Yeah.
I was like, Neri, behave yourself. We have to represent. But she did well, and really that's why we're here.
That's
how we connected at the event. And
it was a great event. And that, to be honest, I didn't know that you were behind everything, because so humble, and you were so like kind of in the background of like, you know, doing your thing. So what a great event.
Thank you.
And anybody listening, please do go and support this fundraising event, because it was so well done. Like, you know, everybody, and there's so many programs that you guys have that I had no idea about.
Totally.
Right? Yeah. Like support groups for like trans parents. So I was like, that's so cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As well as like so many other like events that you guys have throughout the week, monthly meetup groups and such, which is so cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It was, yeah. It feels good to have a platform to spotlight the work that's being done, because it's so varied. And I think people often have their one connection with community because they know one person that got counseling or whatever it is, but they don't realize the like vast scope of work we do. And it makes my job really easy as a fundraiser, because I can spotlight everything that's happening, and it's a lot, and it's a very good sell.
Yeah,
when totally. I ask people to donate.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see like the community come through and donate like large amounts of money and fundraise, and we're like, wow, this is so nice to see that there's support in the community for programs like these, for youth to access, for really anyone and everyone to access. And yeah, I think the parent support group was really nice to hear about.
Yeah, even elders too, right?
Yeah.
That are like needing support. So we can't forget about those folks either, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're all gonna grow old too. We need people. Yeah. We need support.
We need people,
you know, hang out with and such. So
yeah,
it's really nice to see that. So if you're again listening, please check out their support groups and just events that they're holding, because they're pretty awesome.
Yeah,
definitely. I wanted to circle back to you saying like that was a big moment for your family, and I think going back to you saying, like, when you were coming to events, you would just sort of be in the corner and they would, like, ignore. How has it been now with your family setting? Even with Neri and I, we sort of still struggle with, like, family settings, gurdwara settings, like, very heavy Punjabi settings. How is that for you now, navigating your identity and showing up as your authentic self there?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I feel like the struggle that I had for so many years is I was never self-assured or knew who I was. So when I was showing up in those spaces, I was uncomfortable already because I was just generally an uncomfortable person because I was not living the way I needed to be living. And something's really happened over the last couple of years, like just, you know, enough doses of estrogen. And I've like really hit my zone where I'm like, I feel so good. And I think the reason I feel so good is I've had to work so hard to feel so good that when I show up into those spaces, there is no timidness. And I think that shows to people. Like, objectively, people see me and they're like, she's doing good. Like, she's happy. She's engaged. She has a good partner. She has a good job. Like, all the successes are there, which to brown people often mean a lot.
Yeah, you got to go through that checklist, right? Yeah.
So I have that on one end. But then the other end is, like, I just seem happy, present, and engaged. And I think that regardless of people's understanding, if you love someone and you see that, that's enough to know whatever they're doing with their life, they're good.
Yeah.
And even if the conversations aren't always there and I still feel a little bit of that uncomfortableness, I just lean on that. Like, I tell myself, like, girl, look where you are. Look how you feel. Like, you're not that kid that you were or that teenager that you were that was uncomfortable in this space. You're a grown woman who's here on your own terms. And that feels really powerful for myself. You know, there's still certain cultural spaces. I think about Punjabi families. We like to say people are family. We have these giant groups of, you know, that person's dental hygienist, second cousin.
Everybody's your cousin.
Yeah. And you're like, I don't know who that is. Like, no. You met them when you were like an infant or something. Yeah. You should remember them. It's those sorts of people where I'm like, it's like confusing, and I get why it'd be confusing. They haven't seen you in like 20 years, and all of a sudden you come and you're just like a woman. They must be like, what's going on? So I feel like negotiating that feels a little complex, but that's also when I lean on people like my mom, because when you have these people and family who are going to go out of the way to have those conversations so that you don't have to have that with every single person, that makes it feel possible. And I think having those people and like having people come to my events and see who I am and where I'm at in life, it allows them to do that for me and it makes it possible.
Yeah.
Wow. I think that's really powerful. Like, you can tell just chatting with you, you're very powerful, and like your mental talk to yourself, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work. And I think that's a good point that you mentioned. Like, they may not be asking you, but like Punjabi families, when they, you know, they comment on everything, your weight, your look. So, I mean, if you're showing up, you're healthy, you're happy, and they see that, then they'll sort of understand, like, okay, you know, she's okay, she's doing well. And I think all the points that you hit on, like, you have a job, you have a partner, you're like doing well in life, I think if family members see that with like queer identities, they'll understand, like, they're okay, they're not in crisis, everything's okay. I think that's really important, because even like with my family, like, it is sort of like a hush-hush thing, like no one talks about it,
right?
But if I show up in spaces and I'm like confident and I'm happy and I'm like powerful and like, you know, just being who I am versus someone who's like, you know, just all of a sudden I'm quiet, because my personality generally is like talkative. So if I change myself, then that's going to be like, oh, the queerness is, you know, getting to her. I don't know. You know how families think.
Yeah. They start making connections that aren't there.
So I think that's big to understand and like to even reflect on our own journeys. Even to people listening, like how we show up. It's true, how we show up in these spaces versus family spaces versus work or like gurdwara settings, very different, right? We're not like, we're here, we're queer. Like, we're not doing that in those spaces. Yeah. So it's important to have like a mental dialogue that's comforting and
Do check-ins, right?
Like
you're saying, like going into space, like you have great confidence, and I love that. Like, you know, coming in here, even meeting, even chatting on, you know, our Zoom call or whatnot. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, it's going to be a good day, good show, you know. So, and it takes time to get to that point, right?
I think that's the main thing. Like, I had to be patient with myself. I didn't want to push myself when I didn't have the mental fortitude to deal with backlash. Especially when you're early on in transition, especially as a trans woman, the amount of backlash you get when you're not passing is a lot and it's very tiring. And if you try to fight every battle and push yourself, you're going to burn out. It's impossible. You have to start small. You have to start building those other parts of your life before you can integrate everything together. And now when I show up in these spaces, I don't want to just be like tolerated or be like, she's trans and she's okay. That's great. Mm-hmm. I'm doing so well and I'm feeling so good because I'm trans. And I want people to know that. That's who I am. And that's where I gain so much of my power. And I am so thankful that I'm trans. And that feels like such an important thing to say.
Yeah. Aww. Preach, sister.
Yeah. I love it. And that took years. Like this is, you asked me 2 years ago, I would not have said this, but as I like start drawing this power from myself and see who I can be in the world and accomplish, it feels great. And I'm so happy to be at this point.
We feel it.
Yeah.
Your mom's smiling. She's so agreeing. She's liking your confidence and your glow. Yeah. Love that.
I would have never guessed 2 years ago. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So awesome.
Yeah.
Talking about work and working at community, and I know we were chatting off this, you know, as a trans woman to even hold a successful career, like, how is that going for you, and what would you like to say to others like about the discrimination and challenges that trans women do face?
I think when I think about this moment in politics, especially around anti-trans rhetoric, so much of the conversation and focus is around things that are so small in the scope of what specifically trans women face. When we're talking about sports pronouns, bathrooms, sure, these things matter, but these are very little things. The real challenges that I see, and I feel extremely privileged that I have a job, I have housing, I have a supportive family. But a lot of the challenges that trans women, especially trans women of color, face are their material conditions. And if you do not have a job, you cannot survive in this world. We live in a very hard city, especially in Vancouver, that is really costly. And in this like post-apocalyptic capitalist world, things are really hard. And coming out, one of my biggest fears was employment, because you don't know your manager, your coworker, what their views are. And people, when you come out, especially as a trans woman, stop seeing you as a person and they just see you as this identity that they see in the media.
Yeah.
And your whole personhood is gone. And it's so weird from going from that like male privilege one day to that and like feeling the difference. And I worked a lot of customer service jobs earlier in my transition, which was a choice because it's a lot of being misgendered. It's a lot of correcting people. It's working with people in leadership who are like, sorry, I don't know about this trans thing. I'm trying my best. I can't do it, which is illegal. You cannot discriminate people based on their gender and sexuality. Yeah. Very important. But even though things are illegal, doesn't mean that everyone acts that way, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it was really challenging. I was talking earlier about this sort of building your life up, having a safe workplace where I could be myself was one of those big things. And it was taking a lot of my capacity and energy away. So coming into working at a queer and trans resource center was like, great. I don't have to try to like hide my identity or like be shameful about it. There's still challenges like in any workplace, especially like there aren't a lot of people with my identities that work in general in a lot of professional spaces because people aren't given the opportunities. You really have to fight for it.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of luck. I have a lot of people believe in me that have gotten me to this point, and I feel extremely grateful. But it's a really difficult thing, but I think about this all the time. I work at community on Davie Street, which is like right in the heart of the gay village. And like 20, 30 years ago, trans girls were not being employed anywhere. You were so lucky if you got a stable job. So many folks were forced to do survival sex work on Davie Street.
Yeah.
And I think there is something really interesting about being a trans woman of color working on Davie, but in an office job for like a queer nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
I think about this all the time. I'm so incredibly grateful. There's a sex workers memorial like a block away from work, and I walk by all the time. And I'm like, if it were not for these girls and the advocating work they did, I would not be here in this job today.
Yeah, so much has changed, thankfully, for, like you said, like the advocacy work that sex workers have done. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like it's really hard to swallow at the same time that people had to go through this, right? And I do have a friend as well that's a trans woman and is even now till now actually struggling to find a job because there's so much discrimination out there. You know, there's so much discrimination. And it's kind of sad. But like I said, seeing it transition into a better space and opening more doors for trans folks has been really nice to see. and also having folks like yourself in great positions, it's eye-opening and it feels good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a good point that you mentioned, even like with all the campaigns that are happening, you're right, the focus is on bathrooms, pronouns, like that's all. I mean, I'm a teacher, so you can imagine all the conversations are really just about that.
Yeah.
And laws are just about that.
Yeah.
So it must be so frustrating to see that. I mean, I get so frustrated, and to hear the conversation, like you said, even though it's like illegal to discriminate, you see it happening in workplaces, and it's a sad truth. What are some things that you feel like in the system that needs to change then, like you said? Oof. Housing, jobs, like what?
Everything and anything. Yeah. Yeah. Even today, I just was reading an article
talking about the conservative leader and trans women in bathrooms and sports. And doing all the right-wing talking points, all the favorites right now. I think that this is my whole politic around trans issues is we're being so reactive as a queer and trans community. We're saying, what does the right say? How can we dispel it? We can do that game forever. We're going to go in circles. Yeah. The thing about the right is they're really well organized. They're really well funded. And they're really good at creating like social problem. Like they come up with these things that don't exist. They have these think tanks. They like put in all this money and then boom. What happens is we go from having culture wars to legislation getting passed in Alberta to legislation getting passed. There's hundreds and hundreds of bills in the states.
Yeah.
And we're actively losing our rights right now. The thing that I always think of is how can we be proactive in our advocacy? How do we go a step further and say, yes, we need to have conversations around washrooms, pronouns, sports, but how do we advocate for housing? How do we advocate for equal work opportunities, for food security, mental health resources, for safe access to medical care for trans folks with hormones, accessible surgical times? Right now, people have to wait years and years to get surgery. And I tell you, the people in power do not know this. They do not know this.
Mm-mm, they don't.
The people in charge think, oh, BC, we have trans care. BC, trans people must have everything they need. So many procedures are not covered. Facial feminization surgery, hair removal, so many surgeries not covered. And the ones that are, years and years. And that's people losing their lives because they cannot wait.
Yeah.
And these are the issues that I want us to focus on. I want us to spend more time talking about decriminalizing sex work and substance use and focusing on how do we support these folks who are stuck in these survival parts of their life where they have to do this work. How do we support these people with housing? I think that these are the issues that we really need to be talking about because I'm really worried that the right is so well organized in this moment. And I get the frustration. I feel it every day too. Yeah. And I think, how do I use this frustration and do something more than just have the fight on these terms? And it's going to take all of us, right? It's going to be a coalition and we need to learn to work together better. I think there's a lot of infighting that stops us from progressing. There's this sort of idea that we all have to have the exact same viewpoint on everything to work together. And we just need to find our allies, and whether that's going to be our elders in our community who might not understand things the same nuance we do, but they love their kids and they're going to advocate with us. Let's bring them along. It's going to be our teachers who see these youth dealing with the repercussions of these laws. They might not be queer trans themselves, but they know how important this is. Let's bring those people in. Let's all work together to advocate in this moment, because this is the moment, like you say, how far we've come. I'm worried how far we're going to go backwards now.
There's a lot of work to be done, and we need the allies to help advocate, right? And march along with us, as we try to move forward and not back.
And like you said, be more proactive than reactive. Because it's true, you can, even as educators, like we had a huge conference, and like one of the topics was just be about this, like be ready for the right party in the next year for the elections. Like be mentally ready, teachers, because it's coming. And I think it's important to give a heads up. And like you said, they were saying to be more proactive, like actually do something instead of just being like, the world's coming to an end, everything's over. And understand like how to actually use your voice, stand up and like come together. Because I think this conversation is very important with the timing, because you're right, it is happening right now. And the political campaigns are going around right now. And I think it's so important for whoever's listening to hear what you just said. There's bigger issues. There's a big, long wait. It's not... you just go to a medical office and they're transitioned. That's yeah. literally what no. some conversations are. I'm like, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
It's not how it works, but I wish that's how it works. I yeah. wish that I could go in and get what I need
yeah.
because doctors believe what I need.
Yeah.
Even BC, where yeah. we have a model that is supposed to be people come in and we affirm that and give them the help they're asking for. The amount of hurdles, the amount of times I've had to go through my story, the amount of paperwork, the amount of appointments, the amount of time and money, it is astronomical. Like people do not realize the amount that goes into this. Being trans, being a trans woman, it is timely. It is very yes. hard.
Yeah.
Like, how do we make it easier for folks? Because people know what they need. And it's just about yeah. giving them the access to what they need.
For sure. Well, we're going to transition a little bit over to the other work that you also do with the Vancouver Dyke March,
yeah.
which I was able to go to last year.
Oh,
I was
amazing.
Actually my first year checking nice. It out.
Mm-hmm.
It was so amazing. There was like so many people there. I didn't get to attend the march, but I got to go after the park. What a turnout. What an event. Maybe you could share yeah. with the audience what that's about, how that was started, and what your role is there.
Yeah, totally. So it's very exciting, actually. This Pride season will be the Vancouver Dyke March's 20th year, so we're celebrating a Ooh, big wow. anniversary. And the Dyke March is something, I think it's sort of this movement that came up, started in San Francisco, I believe, and it was very much a, like, antithesis to traditional Pride. And I think especially as we see the way that Pride has become commodified and who its audience is for, no shade, enjoy your Pride, go party, whatever, but the essence of that sort of activist spirit is lost. And a lot mm-hmm. of Pride centers a lot of like cis queer men. And the Dyke March is sort of a political response to that, asserting that we're still out here on the streets advocating for something. And we see the disparity in health outcomes, mental health outcomes, economic outcomes for especially queer, trans, women, non-binary folks, trans folks. And that's what the Dyke March is all about, is centering those voices and giving a platform for folks to speak up for what they need. I'm very much a fighter at heart. I'm sure you can tell. Like I'm very fiery. I have a lot of opinions. And it
you
worked.
You need to run for something.
maybe. One day, stay tuned.
Yeah.
But at work, like, my job is fund development. It's about finding opportunities to create new programs and keep our existing ones going. I feel very good at it, but there's a sort of fiery activist part of me that isn't the best opportunity for, so that's where the Dyke March comes in. Technically, I'm a board member, but I see myself as an organizer first. It's like a formality. We're a registered society, so we have to have a board, but we're a working board, so any of the work we decide as a board, we go out there and do it, and we organize. So we're completely grassroots, volunteer-led, no corporate money, alternative to mainstream Pride, and like I said, it's given me an outlet to do a lot more of that sort of activist work. And I'm really excited to continue that going forward. And last year was our biggest year in the history that
wow.
I talked to folks who've been going for 20 years and they're like, I've never seen this many people.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that speaks to what you're saying. Yeah. So many people came out of the pandemic. So many people yes. are itching to create community connection.
Yeah.
And last year was my first time organizing, and seeing that came together was like, it was one of the proudest moments of my life to see. It felt really goosebumps the entire day. So
wow.
yeah, it's a really amazing sort of side gig if I don't do enough other queer and trans stuff already.
Yeah, no, it was so big, like so many people. Yeah.
I'm surprised it's 20 years. Wow, I'm not gonna lie. I've been here my whole life, but I didn't know about that. Because mm-hmm. you're right, like Vancouver Pride does get all the highlight. And like, unless you, I feel you live in Van and you know about the drive, you yeah. would know about Vancouver Dyke March, but it's growing and, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm just thinking for yourself, what a contrast from like community and then like Vancouver Dyke March. So it's cool that you have two areas in your life where you're very, like you said, advocating for
yeah.
queer and trans
yeah. people. I'm hoping Share Vancouver can be a part of it this year, because I know last year we weren't able to, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there was people available. I wasn't either, but hopefully this year.
Please.
We'll be there to represent.
We would love that. Come march yeah. with us. Also, anyone's welcome. It's always the Saturday before Pride on the
yeah.
Sunday. We start with a march down Commercial Drive, yeah. and then we do a big all-day festival. So if you can't come for the march, come for the festival. It's completely free, family-friendly, all the good things.
All yeah. the good stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Love it.
Yeah.
Talking about family, we have your mom here, but we'd love to also hear about your sister.
The fun little bomb that I get to drop on people is my sister is also a trans woman.
Yay!
Which is so wonderful. I wouldn't have it any other way. She's 7 years older than me. Her name's Jules. She's also, not only does she live her life as a trans woman every day, she's also, we like to call ourselves professional trans women in the way that we both, our careers intersect with our identities. She's an academic, public speaker. She's written a couple books. She just wrote one on called A Short History of Trans Misogyny, which is absolutely wonderful. Everyone should check out. So we're always, you know, living our lives, but also thinking about these things in our career, which is like a nice parallel. But the interesting thing is we have this 7-year age gap, and she moved away when I guess she was 18 to go to school. So and ever since then she's lived in the States. So we've really lived our lives in kind of parallel at times, but also like very far apart. And we're the type of siblings, like anytime we talked, we're like this. We're like, got along so easily, but just with the distance and her being really busy with her life, me trying to figure out my shit, like there was a lot of times where we just weren't super close.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the pandemic. I remember I was having a complete gender breakdown, cry, like something is up. I know I have to deal with this thing. And I just called her. And it was like one of those moments where it was like, you know, you like have a conversation with someone and you know this shifts everything. You're like, we are now have this connection. And ever since then, like especially in those early months and weeks and years, like having her to talk to, she had come out already for a couple years, was so, so important. And having that person to like be like, oh, I know what you're talking about, don't worry, don't, like, trust yourself, trust your gut.
Yeah.
And someone who like got my circumstance, because we share blood, like,
yeah,
it's funny, I always think of us as like we're blood related family, but it also feels like queer family in the way that we like have really chosen to be connected around our identity. And you know, that continues today. I feel like we both get so much out of connecting with each other. When I talk about like having these identities where it's hard to find people who really get me, she's like that one person who does. And I feel like I get to be that for her too. So she lives in the States and it's far and I don't get to see her as much as I would like to, but she's definitely like a big, big part of my life. And so much of the reason I am where I am today. Yeah.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting. My next question is like how the impact of family support has been, but I feel like you already answered that. Really.
Supportive and throughout our mom and supportive sister.
Yeah, I'll shout out my mom because that's the other big person. I feel like we're these like three powerful brown women, and we get so much out of seeing each other like succeed and live the way we need to live. Mm-hmm. And we're always there for each other. Like anytime anything happens in life, I need something, like I know I can call either of them. And like having that support when you're based on your identity is going to live a more difficult life makes it so doable. I feel like I get so much resilience and strength from these two incredible women in my life. Mm-hmm. And we just feed off each other. And it's like, sometimes we need to calm down. I think we all are a little like, we're all very fiery too.
Three fiery women, we like yeah, family. I love that.
Three women with opinions, yeah, what the world loves the most.
Love it. I love it. Yeah. Sharon loves it.
Yes.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, your journey, and helping other folks understand what the advocacy work needs to really be done.
I think that was just so helpful to hear your story and for listeners to understand more about community and, like you said, how to be more proactive with the upcoming months. Mm-hmm. And just talking about, you know, your supportive family members, we're excited to have your mom join us, and then we'll have both of you on at the end to have a cute mother-daughter moment.
Can't wait. Yeah, thank you folks so much.
Thank you.
Perfect.
You've been listening to the Share Vancouver podcast with Sharon and Neri, brought to you by Share Vancouver and generously sponsored by 100 Gay Men for a Cause and Envision Financial. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the guests only and do not necessarily reflect the views, policy, or position of Share Vancouver. Remember to like, share, and leave a review, and follow us on Instagram at ShareVan Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hello, Dee. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
We're so excited to have you on. We just had Sid, your fiery daughter, and now we're excited to have fiery mom.
Yes. In a fiery-filled room of women.
Yes. And Bhavesh.
And Bhavesh. Yeah.
But Dee, yeah, we wanted to have you on. You know, we met you at the same time we met Sid, and we were just like, wow, there's a brown mom who's wears two hats. Number one, a clinical counselor and an amazing supportive mom. So we just felt like on the podcast, we really love to highlight parents, especially Punjabi parents, in such a conservative culture we live in. So we'd love to have you on and just talk about your work and also your journey as a mom with accepting not just one, but two trans daughters. Maybe let's start off with counseling.
How long have
you been a counselor for, and how's that been going for you?
Being a counselor, I've been doing it 35 plus years now. I love it more than I've ever loved it before. And I think a lot of that, it's because now I'm doing it on my own terms. I have my own group practice. So that allows me to see and really attract the clients that I feel I can most help, and do it in a way that really resonates with who I am and a difference I want to make with people. So yeah, I'm really loving it.
Yeah, I know, speaking of counseling, and, you know, obviously we're queer South Asian community group, Sharon and I have both worked on booklets for helping folks in the community. I found it really hard to find, especially brown, counselors for support within the community, the queer community. So it's so nice to have you here, and also, you know, advertise that for yourself too, because I know you were saying that there was a lack of queer folk that maybe had reached out to you. But yeah, tell us a bit about what kind of counseling maybe you do, what your specialty is.
What I specialize in is working with trauma, anxiety, depression, and relationship couples counseling, and youth. I started my career working with youth, and they're a big part of my clientele as well. So those are the areas and the people I specialize in. But really, I guess for me, the challenge has been, it kind of organically just happened. I just kind of started my private practice. It's more I wanted to do it on my own. And it was like the South Asian, mostly women, first started to come see me. And it wasn't that I was advertising anywhere in particular for them. They just sort of, from my profile, kind of resonated. And what I heard from them, I've met with counselors, but it's just so hard to explain the cultural piece, or I'm spending so much time doing that, or they're just telling me to not worry so much about the family and just kind of be more individual and do your own thing. And they're like, I can't, you don't understand. So they just came wanting someone who already understood the cultural context. And so that just happened now. It is one of my niches, working with South Asian community, which is wonderful. I have had lots of queer and LGBTQ folks, but not South Asian. Mm-hmm. So that's been very interesting. Mm-hmm. So is that because we're not talking enough about it? I mean, for a lot of the youth who come to me, the queer youth, usually it's their parents who are reaching out to me. Okay. And I just don't think our parents are doing that, because mm-hmm. even the South Asian community that's coming to me, they're still the younger age group, I would say, you know, up until 30s. I'm starting to get a few older South Asian Indian women coming too, which is wonderful. Yeah,
yeah, it's so nice to hear.
So nice to hear. And it's all the things we would expect them to be coming with, which is like they're burnt out, they're doing everything, they're trying to have careers, they're trying to balance the children who's still at home, doing everything to run the household, and just the stress and all of that, and not knowing how to put any boundaries for themselves, or even know they can set boundaries.
It's a huge one.
That's true. Yeah. So yeah, those are kind of the individuals and the folks that I've been seeing. I still feel like we're missing the queer kids in our community for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I'm glad that's what we wanted to bring you on as well. Yeah. So people do know that there is a great supportive counselor that can help you navigate.
Because I feel like even when we were searching for our own selves, I was like, okay, I want someone who's brown, who kind of gets it, and who, like, I'm not fearful to talk about LGBT stuff. And I think those might be the barriers, the reason why maybe not a lot of South Asian LGBTQ youth are seeking counseling, just because of the fear of judgment, number one, and also lack of finding counselors. I couldn't find anyone that I could connect with. And I also wanted a brown person who was, expertise. I don't know if it's expertise or like focuses on LGBT. And I feel like there is a lack of that. So, you know, even having someone like yourself is would be so powerful, I think, to chat with because, you know, they can relate. You're also Punjabi and you're a mom and they would feel that comfort with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also work with a lot of university students. So that's where I thought, oh, I might start to see our South Asian coming from the university. But nope, not even yet from there. But I don't know if it's our lack of exactly that, knowing how to find somebody, right, and with the same cultural background. It's not so much about having the expertise. I think it's about having a non-judgmental, open stance to hear
that
someone's story and validate them for who they are.
Because I think that's a big fear. Like, I mean, for me, it was as well talking to counselors because, yes, they were either like not brown, straight up like, oh, yeah, they don't get the cultural aspect. So it is nice to have somebody of the culture that gets it, you know, instead of saying, no, just go do your own thing. Like, we can't just do that.
Live your life don't for work yourself. Like that. You're like, okay.
Also know that you're in that safe space. Talking to somebody, I know counseling spaces are safe spaces and it's confidential and such, but it's like if they are brown too, you're like, do you know my dad? Do you know my, do you know somebody I know? Kind of, you know, and again, it's a fear that's instilled in me at least where I'm so fearful of that, right? And I'm sure it is for other brown folk too, so.
Love that. I think even just chatting about being a counselor, but also being someone in the community as a Punjabi parent, as a mom, we've talked about off this call, like not seeing those support groups for someone like yourself to go to. Like we chatted, there's Desi Rainbow Parents in America or the States where they have support groups for parents. How has that been navigating that here?
Yeah, I would say non-existent, it feels like. I mean, I'm someone who knows a lot of the resources out there, but yes, there are, I guess, community has a trans parent group, but I haven't been able to access that just because it's on one of my work days. So then there's no other one. And it's like, do I change all my work day just to be able to go to that? To be honest, part of me kind of goes, what will that experience be like in the sense of the cultural piece again? I'm going to guess, maybe I'm wrong. I haven't gone to it, so I can't speak to it. But as a parent, I would love that cultural piece to talk to other parents who, you know, our experience from our, you know, brown perspective, but I don't have that. So it's a challenge. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge as a parent. Yeah.
Maybe you can start one up. We know another person that would join it, Jake's mom and dad, right? It's parent support group. So,
right.
But even the lack of support from parents that we've found, like even to have on the podcast, it's sort of been a stretch. It's like, really finding and reaching out and connecting. And that could be it too, right? The support and, what's the word? Like they're out there, the parents. So, you know, we never knew there was some like a supportive dad like Baltej out there who's fighting and standing up for his daughter or like Perminder auntie who's like an ally or Jag's mom, Angit's mom, Alex's mom. Like these weren't parents that you see. And that's why we really wanted to bring forth, and even with yourself, you know, as a mom, we wanted to show that there are parents, because that was big with our own journey. Like, there's no way, like, Punjabi parents are going to understand this. It's not possible, but it is. You know, and I think we may not have a support group, but there are parents out there who are wanting to be in a space together. And I wonder if that's something maybe Shervan will start in the future. I hope if there's more parents that can come, because I think it's a nice space for parents to be able to talk and connect.
Absolutely. It's, you know, we have our own struggles that are a little bit different, obviously. I think it goes back to a little bit what Sid was saying earlier, that in our culture, we are politely accepting, but let's not talk about it. You know, I get the same thing, or I'll go to our gatherings and now people don't ask me directly too much about what are your kids doing? How are they? Before they did, and now as they transition, it's less often, right? Or they're just, I don't want to say it in the wrong way, so I just won't say anything. And so, you know, it's so different.
What change would you want to see in the community in that sense? I guess approach you. As a parent.
Like you would approach any other parent. That's how I'd want it, which is, how are you? How are your kids? How are they doing? What's up with them? You know, those exact same things they used to ask before their transition that I want them to ask now. Nothing different.
I just think some people might need to just hear that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
The fear is not attempting to speak up, even if you fumble it, that's okay.
Yeah.
But keeping silent, that hurts more.
Yeah. And that's where we need to open these conversations up with folk, right?
Yeah.
I think we lack that a lot, especially within our community, you know? And I think also probably other BIPOC communities as well, right? Because it's really a lot of under rug swept stuff. Let's not address the elephant in the room kind of thing. It's just like, we'll just carry on. Like, nothing's happened. Nothing's going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's all good and peachy clean. But no, it's not, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I like how you mentioned that. Like, just ask how you would have before, right? It's not something you have to not talk about, sweep under the rug. It's just... just ask how they're doing or ask, you know, how I am, like how you would before.
Yeah.
I think the simplicity of that is powerful.
Yeah.
How was your journey as a mother and accepting, you know, and supporting and advocating for your two trans daughters within the community as well?
Right. I guess for me, it really supporting and navigating and supporting my children really started when I just made a decision to have children. And for me, it was a very intentional purpose. I kind of really thought about it probably because I was in the helping field already. But for me, I wanted to have children. And the purpose was to nurture somebody and see who they can actually be if I supported them wholeheartedly and allow them to explore and get curious about who they are, to be their authentic self. That was why I wanted to have children, just to see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And boy, what a journey. I feel like I've been able to, embrace that fully. So to me, it was very, in some ways, very easy to support them. You know, when my eldest first came out as gay, and I remember there was just one moment right away, I went, ooh, I've already experienced so many challenges in my life at that point. And I was like, whoa, why does this have to be so hard? Why must I have to have a child who's going to be gay? And then literally within about 3 seconds, it went to, I know why. Cause I started to think about all the things the fearful parent thinks about. Oh, it's going to be a harder life. It's going to be so much challenging. It's going to be so hard for them. That's going to be heartbreak for me. And then I was like, ah, that's why it's me. Cause I can help. I can take away all of that. There doesn't need to be the heartbreak with this. I can support. I can do that. So it was a really quick transition for me to kind of go, I can 100% support this. And it is me because it needs to be me, you know, to support. So when, each of them has come out, it's been, I can see it as soon as they came out, the relief, the joy, of course, it's been difficult and challenging, but knowing we have each other and to support each other, it was that has meant everything to be part of that. It feels like an honor to be part of that with both of them, to be able to sort of support them through that. As long as we have each other, it's not a difficult thing. Yeah. All I want them to be, like any parent wants, I want them to be themselves. I want them to feel good about themselves. I want them to be successful, whatever that means for them. And I want them to be in healthy relationships. I want them to feel like they can do meaningful work in their lives. That's all I want. It's the same thing every parent wants. And I can see that they both got that. So it's like, it's wonderful. It's beautiful. And that inspires me to do the same for myself. Like it's been a two-way street. Absolutely.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. It's so sweet to hear from a mom. And like you said, at the end of the day, like your intention to have a child was to support them, to love them. And I think that's really powerful because sometimes I think parents or even all of us can get caught up in what will people say? What will society say? Lo que quiera, right? Like, so I think, you know, I'm sure your counseling background helped. But it's nice to, like, you know, to hear that you were, at the end of the day, you saw your child first, society later, which is what we heard from parents who've come around. But I'm sure it wasn't easy.
Yeah.
And a lot of journeys aren't, but you understand what you said, which is what all parents have said, like, the child matters first.
To me.
Yeah. And it has to be through, we say it's just love, but it's support. You can have love, and I think all of our parents have love for their children.
Yeah.
It's when they fall short of the support of the way the child needs it, that's where we're letting them down, you know, and that's what's hurting them. That's what's making them also question the love. Do my parents love me anymore? Because the support's not there, even though deep down we know, and they probably do know, but they start to question that. We got to do both.
Yeah, that's so true, though. It is the support, actually, really. Yeah. Like, love we know is there, right?
We know.
But the support from our parents, our guardians, whoever's taking care of us, that the support is there, that they're there to walk with us hand in hand. We'd love to bring back Sid to just have a cute moment with Mama Bear.
Yes. Yeah,
talking about support, you are here with Sid, and we'd love to have both of you on to have a cute moment. So we'll let you both take the lead from here.
Hello. Look at us magically here together. thank you for all sharing your side of everything. I feel like part of the reason this feels so special right now is to have us have an opportunity. I know we have these conversations all the time, but like hearing you speak, I think, Celine, throughout this process on your reason for having kids is something that has felt really impactful for me. And I feel like that's something that I hope more folks think about before they have kids, because I think something that would feel so different when a child comes out, instead of acceptance, is celebration. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what you're talking about. I often think of when we're having these conversations, South Asian parents, like, I feel very lucky to have a parent like you who was so easily accepting and celebratory. Why are you this way? Because I feel like there's some good context behind how you've already been this sort of advocate and fighter and trailblazer within the community.
Yeah, I think that comes from my own lived experience and different context, same story. I was 18 when I was dating a Caucasian man, and at that time that was totally unacceptable, and there was nobody else, at least no one else, talking about doing that. I had to hide it. You know, in some ways, like I say, different contexts. I had to hide that from my family. Once they found out, then it was like, you need to end it and mm-hmm. or marry him. And I was like, I was not ready to do either. And so then my family kept pushing that, and I decided I can't do either of these. And so then my family cut me off. It was like, you're dead to me. No contact with family. Family was everything to me at that moment, at that time in my life. That's all I knew. So I had to move out of the family home and was out on my own. So I know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. And it sounds kind of silly now if we think about it, and even in our own community, to be cut off from your family because you want to do something different than what was expected. It was just to date a white man at that time. It seems silly now, but that was my life. That was my experience. I got cut off for that. I could have just done that and kept silent, but I didn't want to. Mm-hmm. I thought that's too easy for them to think I don't exist, that to them I was dead. So I kept knocking on their doors. I kept calling my parents. Even they hung up on me many times, but I thought, I'm not making it that easy for you. I'm not letting you know, because I do exist. I kind of going back to what we talked earlier. I know you love me, but I need your support because it hurts like hell being mm-hmm. out here on my own.
Yeah. I think hearing that story, always having that in my head, was always this indicator of like, I know you know what the stakes are to have a parent supporting you in your life. And I feel like that's why I've always been so confident, like, that I would have you in my corner, because you know how important it is. Also, we've been seen as the shit disturbers in our community already. Like, you already did that. And it's like people already see, like, they know that we're going to do us, and we're confident in that. And I feel like that's such a powerful way to see your parent live and to exude that in every part of their life, that when you're going through that own journey as a kid, like, you know that you can really push to live and lead the life that you need. So I think I draw a lot of inspiration for you, and it feels really important and meaningful to connect our stories together and to be an example now of, like, we have such a good relationship. We have so much fun with each other. I feel like that's a great part. Not only can we support each other emotionally through the hard shit that we have to deal with, like, as women of color, but we connect and we have such a meaningful relationship. And I feel like it's because we've been able to pursue ourselves and be authentic that it's given that given us the opportunity to connect in a way we might not have to the degree, right?
Yeah, I think for me, I've always said I could not have not done what I did because that's the only way I can be who I am. Mm. And I almost felt like I had to, and I feel it's the same. And I know it's the same for you, the same for Jules. And yeah, we have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We did.
And queer folks have the most fun. So you're very lucky to have really cool queer trans daughter. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you guys both again for sharing your amazing stories and journeys and having this cute little moment at the end as well. Well, that's a wrap, but we'd love to know what your handles are and maybe your practice, where that's at, and a website where people can connect with both of you. So please do share.
Sure. My practice is called Searchlight Counseling. You can go to my website, www.searchlightcounseling.com, and all the information's there for you.
Yeah, and the two main places that I talked about is you can visit community.ca, especially if you're interested in some of the programs or services we talked about. Everything's listed there. Also, Vancouver Dyke March, search it up on all platforms, Instagram, all the things, same with community. And if folks want to contact me, I was just saying this, I'm a professional girly. Find me on LinkedIn at Sid Gill. If you would like my professional expertise, I can be reached out there for opportunities. And if you have questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to community too, especially around things we talked about today. There's a help desk where people are there every day of the week. So call and email them around any of the sort of programs, like I said. Yeah, and thank you so much for having us. This has felt like a really meaningful space for us to connect and reflect, and having it in a space that is for queer, trans, BIPOC folks, like that for and by, that is, that's super important. And I feel like this is making me reflect how important these spaces are for me. So thank you both for facilitating this.
Yes, thank you so much.
And you're really welcome. But we'll say bye on 3, 2, 1.
Bye. Bye.
You've been listening to the Share Vancouver podcast with Sharon and Neri, brought to you by Share Vancouver and generously sponsored by 100 Gay Men for a Cause and Envision Financial. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the guests only and do not necessarily reflect the views, policy, or position of Share Vancouver. Remember to like, share, and leave a review, and follow us on Instagram at ShareVan Podcast. Thanks for listening.